Welcome to the Global Math Department. We'll start in about 1 minute. Welcome to the Global Math Department. My name is Amanda Riske, and I'll be your host tonight. We are going to hear from Michael Fenton tonight about what comes next, the creative power of visual patterns. Would everyone please introduce themselves in the chat window, telling us what you teach, where, what your Twitter handle is, if you have one, and I'll give you some time to do that. Tonight, we're going to be using the hashtag PatternChat. Just so if you want to make a note of that, if you want to tweet during the session or after the session as well. So please introduce yourselves. Just give another minute to see. If you're joining us just now, please make sure to introduce yourself in the chat window. Please feel free to tweet and use the hashtag PatternChat. Before I introduce and turn everything over to our speaker, let me explain a little bit about how these meetings work. These meetings are recorded and are available a few hours after the meeting ends. To view the recording, come back and to the same URL. The Global Math community prides itself in being friendly and supportive. The chat room is available for topical and general conversation throughout the meeting. I'll catch your questions for the presenter, so don't worry, they won't go unnoticed. You can also use, there should be the chat part on your screen as well as the Q&A. If you have questions along the way, feel free to put the question part in the Q&A and the comments responding to what Michael is talking about live in the chat. Also, feel free to tweet out photos of what you're doing and use the hashtag PatternChat, please. All right, and tonight our speaker is Michael Fenton. He taught junior high and high school math for about 11 years. He is now lead instructional designer at Desmos, where he explores the intersection of mathematics, technology, and curiosity. So I just want to take it, you can take it over, and we'll be going for about 45 minutes, and the last 15 minutes we'll have for Q&A.
So awesome.
Take it away,
thanks,
Michael.
Amanda.
Yeah.
And thanks, everybody for joining us. I'm getting a little bit of an echo, so if you are a participant and you've got your mic on. Oh, looks like it's gone. Might have been me and you, Amanda. Wendy, the fan does look like it's grown out of my head. I'll try to reposition my body so it's less awkward. Thanks for coming, everybody. So I love visual patterns. I love patterns in general. I love math. I love exploring this stuff with colleagues and with young people, including my own young people at home. And I've got a few questions that will drive some explorations of visual patterns that we're going to look at together tonight. And I'm pretty excited about this set of questions. I've been in love with visual patterns for quite a while, but I feel like there's a few twists that I can bring to you today, some inspired from current colleagues and some from former colleagues and some from new friends I've met at recent conferences. So hopefully we'll have a lot of fun going through this. I mentioned to the folks who got here early that this will be way more fun if you have something to scribble with and scribble on, like old school paper, pencil, pen, colored pencils if you want to go gangbusters here. But this will be more fun if you play along rather than just watching my like talking head and the fan growing out of the head kind of thing. It'll be more fun if you participate, and hopefully we'll all get to learn more from everybody, not just from some of the things I have to share. So overview, like, of the structure of our time together here, I have five rounds for you, and each of those rounds will be driven by a question or a series of questions as we explore a particular visual pattern. So if you're not familiar with visual patterns, we'll spend a little time at the very beginning getting used to them, and then we'll put a few twists on them in rounds 2 through 5. So get your thinking caps ready, get your scribbling utensils ready, and let's dive right in. So I just did the overview part, so we don't even need that anymore. This was the visual reminder for me that you should have something to scribble on, and we are ready to go. If you do scribble on things and you have a smartphone nearby and you'd like to share your work, first, we as a group would be indebted to you for sharing that out. And here's the way to share it on Twitter. Just slap hashtag pattern chat on there and you'll be good to go. You can mention me if you want, but if you actually throw on this hashtag, it'll show up in our chat window on the side of the big marker software right now. So I'd love to see your thoughts and your work as we go. Some of the questions that I ask here have maybe a sentence as an answer or a number as an answer, and feel free to jot some of those down in the chat window. But these are visual patterns. So for the visualness, you know, smartphones, photos, the internets, let's see how that goes. I hope everybody is ready for round one. So here's what I want you to do on that, that writing utensil and area to scribble that you've set aside. Structure your paper into three regions. It might look something like this, might look a little bit different. And in the very first of those three regions, maybe we'll call it the first frame, I'd like you to sketch this for me. Can you reproduce that visual on your paper? I'll give you a moment to do that. Pacing is always kind of difficult in webinars. So if you are done with that, maybe you just want to write nailed it or something in the chat window. And not everybody needs to do that, but the first couple of folks there will let me know. Oh, yeah. Thanks, guest 751. Amanda, nailed it. Done, done. Yep. Awesome. Cool. So pacing wise, I feel like we're ready for the next thing, which is just think about this. Just visualize it. You don't have to scribble anything on your paper and you don't have to write anything in the chat window. How many circles do you think there will be in the next stage? Take a half a minute or so to think about that. Just think about that to yourself. How many circles do you think there will be in the next stage? Normally in a classroom, I'd now do, you know, turn and talk to your neighbor, but let's use the chat window. Jot down, how many circles do you think there will be in the next stage? Drop that in. Martin says 10, Wendy's got 11, Ivy says 3. Oh, Ivy, nice. So it goes from 5 to 3. Deborah says 7, got a lot of answers in there. I noticed just a ton of variety. And I'm going to say that what I had in mind was this. Would you do me a favor and sketch that on your page? And maybe as you're sketching and you're attending to the structure, a quick side note, like teacher talk for a moment as you continue wearing your student hats. The reason that I have my students sketch these out is it invites them, encourages them to attend to the structure of these patterns way more than when I would just kind of quickly show a few stages and ask kids to think about the fourth stage. We're kind of slowly acclimating ourselves to this particular pattern. And I found that to be pretty helpful in the classroom. All right, so I think asking for this in the chat isn't going to be a strong move, but normally I'd ask students to just call out how many there are. And here we'd call out that there are 8. So do me a favor now. How many circles do you think there will be in stage 3? Again, just do this sort of silently in your own head. Oh, I blew it. Lots of folks are chiming in the chat window. That's totally cool. If you want to avoid spoilers, just ignore the chat window for another 10 seconds or so. All right, and we'll do the webinar equivalent now of turn and talk to your neighbor. How many circles do you think there will be in stage 3? I've seen not lots of 9s, lots of 11s. I see a 12 here more recently. And I'll go ahead and do the reveal. Here's the reveal. Would you sketch that in that third frame, that third region of your paper that you've carved out? So now you have stages 1, 2, and 3. I love Wendy's response there. Whoa, like, and I think that's coming from a that's not what I had in mind perspective. And we're going to circle back to that feeling in a couple of minutes, because I think that's a pretty powerful feeling. And I want to, instead of ignoring that, I want to capitalize on that as best we can. So a few more seconds to sketch this third stage. And then we've kind of had this slow build and we're getting acclimated. And this is my favorite part here of this particular routine is sketch stage 4. So previously I just had folks chime in with a number. It's kind of a low commitment. And then I would show what I had in mind for this particular pattern. And you could copy that, sketch it out on your paper. I'd like you actually to commit to stage 4 now. Scott Miller, is it intentional? No symmetry, the symmetry. The 3 stages are definitely intentional. Sketch your best guess of what you think stage 4 looks like. Anywhere on your paper is fine. If you've got room for a 4th frame right next to the 3rd frame, jot it down there. I'll give another moment for that. All right, and now we'll take advantage of the webinar format. I would love if anybody willing to would jot down not just how many they have in their 4th stage, but can you describe the structure a little bit for me in there? Maybe just a short sentence or two. How many circles in that 4th stage and how you see them, how they're arranged in your sketch on the paper. And for those who've got their smartphones at the ready and their hashtags ready to go, you're welcome to take photos of your work and drop those on Twitter as well. So Martin's calling out this 3x4 in the middle with a circle top left and a circle bottom right. Looks like Ivy's calling out the columns, the 4, 3, 3, 4. I see somebody thinking about multiplication. Lauren may have seen this pattern before. Lauren, I promise there's some new stuff coming up. All right, so I'll share. Actually, is that coming next? No, I think it is not. Here's what I'd like to do now. I'm going to scroll back in the pattern chat window. Sorry, in the chat window for Big Marker, and say that what I had in mind was the same thing Martin and Ivy had in mind, at least if I'm understanding their descriptions correctly. I've got a 3x4 rectangle in the middle with a circle top left and a circle bottom right. Or I've got that 4, 3, 3, 4 for the columns. So I've got 2 questions for you to pursue, and I'll give you a few minutes to tackle one or both of these on your own. And again, scribbling on your paper, taking photos and tweeting if you're interested. How many circles will there be in stage 10? And at what stage will the number of circles first surpass 100? So here are the first 3 stages of the pattern again, if the visuals for these visual patterns prove helpful to you. I'll just give a couple of minutes, everybody working on their own. And feel free to tweet out your responses online or jot something down in the chat window if you're not the Twitter type. And again, my questions here, how many circles in stage 10? Find it any way you want. And at what stage will the number of circles first surpass 100. I'm particularly interested in seeing not just the answers, but the work, the thinking, the visualization that supports your responses there. A couple of minutes on that, and then I'll chime back in. So Wendy's calling out a pattern she sees, which is like adding three more in the middle, like squeezing three more in between those columns that keep expanding. And yeah, if that's the pattern you see, push that pattern further. Oh, and guest 751 with the delightful spoiler of a question. We're actually going to dive into that question with another pattern in a few minutes. Some of the stage 10 and 100 circles work is starting to show up on Twitter. I see Anna's got some really neat color coding to show kind of one stage building to the next. I see Lauren's drawing, I would call Lauren's approach lazy and efficient. So for anybody who's not following along on Twitter and hasn't clicked out to see where those links lead to images, Lauren has drawn a rectangle instead of drawing like a 3x10 rectangle and called it 30 instead of drawing a 3x10 array of circles. So kind of one object instead of 30 smaller objects seems like a nice time saver. And it looks like Martin's tackling that. How many stages, or at what stage will we first surpass 100 circles? So at this point, you could do one of two things right now. You can either kind of keep chipping away at that problem on your own, or circle back to the whole group webinar conversation, whatever it is that we have going on right here. And I want to call out something I mentioned earlier, which is that I have my students, when I was playing with these in classrooms with my own students, I would have them draw each stage and sort of predict the next one and predict the next one just to get more and more acclimated to this particular pattern. I found that if I would put all three stages and ask them about stage 4 and then 10 and then so on down the line, that they often like hadn't attended to the structure that I found helpful in seeing the pattern and extending the pattern. But as soon as I had students, I just read lazy and efficient, and it looks like lazy and deficient. I'm distracted by the Twitter feed. Circle back to the webinar. As soon as I had my students sketch these stages on their paper, they would just naturally attend to how the first stage was built, how the second stage was different. And having them predict and then reveal was a nice little sequence of sometimes they'd be surprised and sometimes it would confirm their thinking. So that's kind of my new favorite way to unfold a pattern. Well, I want to show off just briefly. Here's some of the thinking that I've seen from teachers and students for this particular challenge. I didn't show off the 100 circles question, but I've got stages 1 through 4 on the top there. I've got Lauren's rectangle idea. I've seen that a couple of times before. I've seen some folks use tick marks to call out the columns like this. And then I've seen both kind of the efficient, compact numerical expression we've got here on the left, the 2 plus 3 groups of 10, or the 2 plus 10 groups of 3. We can read that in either direction. So that's going to bring us to the end of round one. And I've got to put a giant disclaimer that we have by no means exhausted all that there is to do with visual patterns. For one, we haven't brought, at least I haven't intentionally brought in any like organizing numerical data into tables to like track numerical patterns. And there's even a big discussion about whether or not that's the best approach to use with visual patterns. And if so, when do you bring that in? Contrasting one pattern with another, talking about types of functions, linear versus quadratic versus other. You can go really, really deep. You could do way more than a 1-hour webinar just on this stuff. You could do an entire course just digging into numerical patterns and algebraic extensions of those patterns. But I want to hit the pause on this particular development. And instead of sort of chasing that to its conclusion or chasing that further down the line, I want to move us into round two. And this is the first of a series of questions that will put a little twist, a little spin on our play with visual patterns. So here we go. Here is stage one. In fact, maybe you don't know that it's stage one. I don't know. I've kind of given it away that the left frame is filled in. I've got this 2x2 array here, and I wonder what you think comes next. So would you do me a favor and sketch on your paper that first stage? And then nearby, would you also sketch what you think comes next for a second stage? And would you push it a little bit further and also sketch stage three? If I give you maybe a minute, fingers crossed that that's enough time to sketch stage one and two and three. Libria, if that's how you see it, go ahead and sketch that out on your paper. And I love that you're sharing your thinking there. If other folks want to describe how you're visualizing it, what you're sketching, whether you want to describe that verbally or you want to take a photo and send something on Twitter. Jackie, yeah, I think that's a legitimate concern. And my students, I don't think... So some of these twists have come after I left the classroom, and I've been experimenting with my own kids and with classrooms that I get to visit and inviting other teachers to explore. But my students had enough exposure when I was in the classroom to lots of different patterns that I didn't see that hesitation as, well, I'm conjecturing, so maybe I'm waffling a little bit as well. But I have a hunch that with enough exposure to a lot of different patterns that students might be more inclined to make a conjecture. Also, if we've kind of built a culture of like, I love all kinds of answers. I love right answers and wrong answers. And we're going to learn from all of this. Anyway. So my question here is really what comes next. But I want to push your thinking a little bit further here. Yes, Scott, that might be a great way to frame the question. And maybe that's sort of embedded in what I have with this pair of questions. So I'm going to push everyone with this second question on the screen here. What else might come next? And if I go back just briefly to that question or the comment that Jackie made, that some students, maybe including her own, would have trouble creating a pattern. My hope is that this second question will break them out of that. The idea that I don't just want what you think comes next, like as it relates to what's in my head, but what might come next? What else might come next? What else might come next? And so if you are playing along at home, scribbling things on paper, would you do me a favor and try to generate at least three different patterns that could spring forth from this original frame one, this 2x2 stage one that we have here? I think that by asking students to generate multiple patterns, it might break down that idea that there's only one right answer or that I have to read my teacher's mind if I'm going to be correct. So here I'm going to highlight some work that I've seen on Twitter. And Deborah's calling out that a question lowered her anxiety. I assume you might be referring to Scott's question back there. So I just want to call it out again. Scott says, could the question be framed with come up? Whoops, automatic scrolling, sometimes not helpful. Could the question be framed with come up with a pattern that you think is unique or what other students would come up with? All right, and let me bring in another image that I saw on Twitter. So we can just get a sense of some of the variety that you folks are creating on the fly. Here's what I saw from, let me go back and give credit where credit is due. This is from Mark. That previous one was from Amanda. And Cassandra makes a really valuable comment, or I don't know how to describe this even. Anyway, Cassandra's statement is really important, and it's a really important thing to like call out early in the classroom if you're going to play with these ideas with your students. She says, not sure if I am on the money. And that's 100% what this is all about. It's that you have an idea. It might be different from mine. It's valuable. I want to see it. I want to see your thinking. I want to see how you saw it. And so absolutely you're on the money. If that's how you saw it and you could describe to someone else visually, numerically, verbally, or some combination, then yeah, you are totally on the money. So let me drag hers into the mix and just see if some jaws drop the way mine did when I saw this. So, don't think so. So I'm just absolutely in love with this interpretation of the pattern. And I'm grateful that you shared it. And as I think about what I hope unfolds in the classroom when we do some things like this, it's that students will surprise each other, that they will surprise their teachers, and that things will be legitimately surprising. We've got a holy cow from Jessica, so that's fantastic. James is saying sweet, exponential. Anyway, so just going back to that, almost that hesitancy that I saw in that comment. And we're really starting to fly on the Twitter chat. Cassandra's comment, not sure if I'm on the money. Yeah, absolutely you are. And that's the point of this, is calling attention to lots of different amazing ideas. So let me see if I can get back to that slide that I had earlier. Here's my conjecture. And at this point, it's largely conjecture, although I've been tinkering with these ideas with my kids in classrooms that I've had a chance to visit. And I've invited some teachers to help me explore these ideas as well. But here's my conjecture, that if you take all the wonderful, delightful, like multi-representational things that you might have already been doing with visual patterns, and you kind of encapsulate that in the question, what comes next? And you may or may not borrow ideas of like having students sketch out each stage, like all of that, that's kind of in the weeds. You choose your style. You may or may not bring in tables. You may keep it visual, whatever you do. But if you pepper that with this second question, what else might come next? What else might come next? And instead of giving students two, three, or four stages, which kind of locks us into one or two possibilities, peel it back, only show them two stages, leave some ambiguity. And maybe this actually goes back to the question earlier, which I think that might have been from Jackie, about students' hesitancy to share something if all we give them is one stage. Try this, give them two stages. And as math teachers, we know that two stages doesn't lock a function into a particular path. It might still be linear, quadratic, or something other and delightful. Give them two stages and say, what comes next? What else might come next? And then after some more experience there, give students one stage and say, what comes next? What else might come next? And so I would challenge you just on your own as you're playing with these ideas, and who knows, maybe you bring them into your own classroom, start by challenging yourself to begin with a particular stage and just see how many different things can spring forth in your mind from that starter stage. James is saying, couldn't you have students sort their different patterns to look for common behavior? Yeah, absolutely. And if I don't mention it now, let's bring it up in the Q&A. But there's a teacher in Maine who has every single pattern on fawnwinsvisualpatterns.org website printed and posted on her wall. And then she does something amazing with that wall with her students. So if I don't remember, James, maybe you could be the boss of asking me to remember at the end about what that teacher does with her patterns. It gets very meta with visual patterns. But that being said, let me show off some of the things that Zach Champagne and I, so I don't know if folks are familiar with Zach Champagne, a fantastic mathematician and math educator and just human being, also has great taste in music. He and I played a game a couple months ago, and we said, let's see how many different things we can generate from this little 2x2 grid. And already from Twitter, I can see that we as a group here tonight have created a lot more things and many things more interesting than Zach and I created. But I just want to highlight some of what he built. And there's even some teasers in here for the next couple of rounds of the questions we might ask other than what comes next and what else might come next. And then I took some time after our conversation and I put it into just a little sketch. It's like Photoshop, but for dummies or for me, I don't know. Anyway, this is what I came up with as a way to visualize the patterns that Zach and I created. So this 2x2 starter stage is in the middle and all kinds of mathematical life springs out from that center. So maybe it's a 2x n. Maybe it's these squares that overlap, but they alternate. Libri, I was describing the software because I don't know how to use Photoshop. So one of my colleagues showed me Sketch, which is different software and easier for me to use anyway. But going back to these patterns, this is just some of the things that Zach and I created. And I think gives a hint at what's possible. And it's just a fun visual, I think, for showing like all of this springs from that one 2x2 array. So you might look at a 2x2 array and think, oh, like that's kind of interesting. What could we do with that? But if you tap into your students' thinking, there's a lot of delightful things that can spring forth. And then now that it's their thinking on display, whether it's on paper or whiteboards or digitally captured somehow, now you can invite your students to do what I used to do for every single visual pattern, which is find the fourth stage, find the 10th stage, find the nth stage. When are we going to pass 100? When are we going to pass 1,000,000? That same routine that I used to do with my standard visual patterns, you can actually, after having students play the what comes next, what else might come next game, and then having them share with their classmates. Maybe you have some clever way, and if so, share this with me. I'd love to know what you do. Some clever way of quickly sharing those with the room. Then invite them to pick a pattern they're interested in, whether it's theirs or a classmate's, whether it's complex or simple, whether they've seen it before or not, and figure out the fourth stage, the 10th stage, figure out an algebraic representation, organize the numbers in a table, maybe plot a graph, maybe check the results on, you know, some free online graphing calculator. I'm not sure. That's what I used to have my students do anyway. So all of those things that maybe you've been doing that have been profitable for connecting different representations, I'd invite you to do the same thing with your students' patterns that they create from that starter stage or those one or two starter stage. It looks like Libri is sharing a way that her colleague has shared. Google Slides, highlight immediately by taking pics with phone. Nice. I also use Dropbox on my phone and I have the image upload start automatically so that by the time I take a photo and walk back to my laptop, oftentimes those images are already on my device and then I can project them onto a whiteboard. And if you have the right setup, you might scribble on the whiteboard. I don't recommend scribbling on your smart boards. Well, I guess if you're using the digital link, that's fine, but lots of different ways. And maybe some different folks will chime in here. And it looks like Bob has a popular recommendation. So check out the chat after the webinar if you want some more ideas. Or maybe check out hashtag pattern chat. My hope is that we sort of take the world by storm with awesome and creative things there. So round two, we could dive deeper, but let's change gears just slightly here and look at another question. So here's another pattern. And I hope you notice that something is different here. And I wonder if someone might even, like, what do you think the question might be here? You started to maybe get a sense of the style of tonight's webinar, and maybe you can even predict the question that I would ask my students when I show them this. Yeah, what came first? What changed? All of these questions are fantastic. What might come first? The way I frame it, basically identical in content to what some folks have added there. I just say what comes before. And the reason I do that instead of what comes first, although what comes first is a really nice question for this particular screen, is if I say what comes before, not only can we say what comes before what we're looking at right now, but we can keep, like, we can iterate that question, just like the what comes next and what else might come next generates a longer conversation. I can keep asking my students what comes before, what comes before, what comes before. We can keep playing that game. Thanks for coming, Lauren. I'll see you later. So I don't know that we're going to have enough time to get through all the goodies that I have planned here. And so I'm going to short circuit the, or I'm going to cut short our what comes before chat and just say that this is one of the things that might come before. And you can ask what might come before that and before that and before that. And here's another conjecture, again, because a lot of these ideas are not like tried and true over the course of, you know, a 30-year teaching career, because that'd be awkward. I would have started when I was five and so forth. But also a lot of these questions are newer to me and things I'm interested in rather than bringing you things that are rock solid work every time. So my conjecture is this, that by asking what comes before, not only do you bring in the y-intercept for those who like taking visual patterns into an algebraic and or graphical territory, but you can also push into integers. So stage -1, stage -2, stage -3. So we get into integers there, but we also get into integers as soon as I run out of circles. Here my pattern starting from the right, I've got, 9, 7, 5, and then 3, and then 1, and then like, what in the world am I gonna do before that? And that's, I think, a really great question to ask students. And this is one that I asked my own kids, not with a pattern that looked like this, but just counting backwards, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What comes after that? And my son actually, he wanted to go back up to +1 after hitting 0, +1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But I'd be curious to see if this question, what comes before, sparks some interesting questions around integers with your students or your kids or whoever. In terms of using circles, I also use squares, line segments, all kinds of things. And I've actually found that younger children, elementary specialists on the webinar might help me out a little bit with this. But in my very limited experience with very young people, the negative space between the circles sometimes proves problematic, at least for visualizing. And so I found that younger people like both manipulatives, but also squares have been better because they push up right against each other rather than leaving that awkward negative space inside. So if we had pushed this conversation a little bit further and if we had gathered some of your responses on Twitter, we might have seen some things like this, stage 2, 1, 0, and so on back to -3. And one of the things that I've seen folks use, both students and teachers, is a different color to represent negative circles or negative objects or negative pieces. In this case, I just shaded in to show negative. Certainly not the only way to represent it. And I'd be curious to see how you and your students represent that idea of not just negative stage numbers, but negative objects. What does that even look like? Let's jump into round 4. Round 3, I'm not entirely sure if that's going to lead to profitable classroom discussions. That's the one I'm least sure about, but I'm pretty sure round 4 will. So let's see what you think about this. So here is that original stage 1 from our what comes next, what else might come next. And then here's a stage 4 for one of those patterns that might have unfolded. I saw a couple of folks post this on Twitter. This is one of the things that sprang forth on my sort of wheel O patterns image that you saw a few minutes ago. But instead of giving students stages in succession all the time, maybe give them stage 2 and stage 4. And then the question that'll drive the conversation, and again, for more than just a moment, is this one, what comes between? And I think it's a pretty natural transition if students are used to thinking about stage 1, 2, and 3, and then they instead think about stage 1 and stage 3. It's just a different piece of a familiar puzzle that's missing, and they have to fill in that different missing piece. And it sounds like Deborah has some experience with this particular pattern and that middle missing. That's kind of a fun phrase to describe what we're looking at here. And so here's one thing that you might put in between there. I've got a 2x2, a 4x4. I think that maybe a 3x3 would go in the middle. That's certainly not the only thing that could go there. Again, we could say what else might come between. What else, what else, what else is kind of a nice refrain for drawing out more student thinking and highlighting kind of the diversity of ideas that we might get if we don't always give students such a scripted sequence of stages. But here's where I get really interested in the question, what comes between? What comes between these? So I've tried to show you stage three fading out a little bit. Let's not focus so closely on that one. And instead, let's look at stages one and two. So what would stage 1.5 look like? Take a moment to scribble that down on your paper. And if you've got your thumbs ready with your smartphone, oh, spicy, that's a fun response in the chat there. If you can manage to take a photo, I would love to see what you think comes between stage 1 and stage 2. I just took a look over at the pattern chat feed on Twitter, and I don't have any stage 1.5s just yet, but it's looking like Christmas with all the other awesome visual things going on there. I'm going to have to go through those and dive deep in a little bit. Oh, I find that interesting. So Libria is saying she's got the number, but she's not sure what the picture looks like. I think that some students and teachers will probably be more comfortable in one direction or the other. And I love visual patterns because they invite like a bridge building between those representations. And so you might be like a super visual person, and the numbers or the algebra is harder. And maybe the visual is a bridge to the algebra for you. Or maybe you're more of a numerical thinker and the numbers can be a bridge to the visual for you or a bridge to the algebra as well. I'm seeing some responses pop up. I see a what else question written in there. Cool. Let me highlight these two for you and then oh, that's kind of fun. It looks like somebody took a bite out of some of these. Let's see how quickly I can navigate the software here. All right, I do believe that in a second or so, there we go. You should be able to see in the big view here. This is what, who did I steal that from? Let me go back. This is from Chris. Chris, thanks for sharing this. Very cool. And then let me pull up one more of these. Is that it? Yeah, this one right here. I saw someone earlier call out 6.25, and I think that's what Chris's representation looked like. This particular visual for what comes between, I stole this from Amanda. This is 6, so like who's right? Well, I'd say both of these folks are right, or maybe they're both wrong. I don't know. I would want to hear more from Amanda and Chris. Like, tell me more about that. Like, what? How are you seeing it that way? And then I hope this doesn't sound like a broken record, but I would keep pushing depending on whether or not my students were ready or like if they were comfortable with this, I would keep pushing. If we had sort of hit our limit, we might pause there and circle back in a few weeks later and push deeper. But I would say, well, what comes between those? What comes between those? And definitely raises some questions. Yeah, Libri is calling out, is this discrete? Is it continuously growing? I actually don't have a clear answer for you. Part of this, part of the reason this is fun for me is I'm asking questions that I don't have like the answer in mind that I hope somebody stumbles across so we can keep the conversation going forward. I'm actually legitimately surprised by some of what pops up in that Twitter feed. and some of what pops up in a session or in a classroom. And I find that to be really exciting. Here are some things I sketched out before we got started here. I had two different variations of the 2x3. And then I had the 2.5x3.5, although my visualization was not quite as cool. Casey like left off the boundaries to show that it was like halfway, they were not complete. And Chris had the like torn paper visualization. I threw this 5-square version in here at the bottom that maybe like, maybe you push out to the corner and then fill in, and then push out to the corner and fill in. And I bet as a group, we could come up with 2, 3, 4, 5 more possibilities for stage 1.5. And maybe we pick one of those and look at stage 1.25, or maybe because it's getting close to 10 o'clock Eastern time, we wrap up stage 4 or round 4 and we look at round 5. This will be short but sweet. Here's a visual. I think this qualifies as a fractal. I don't have a crystal clear definition of fractal in my mind. Self-similar. Maybe this is not a fractal. Somebody in the chat window help me out so I don't sound so foolish in a recorded video that goes on the internet. Fractals are self-similar objects, and I'm not sure if this qualifies. Anyway, if this is stage 1, 2, and 3, we could ask what comes next. I think that's a delightful question to ask. We could ask what comes 4th, 5th, 10th, nth. I think all of those things are great. But the reason I've chosen this pattern for round 5 is to highlight some of what's possible with this particular question. What comes way down the line? So I'm interested in ideas of like infinity and just continuing forever, and not just for like our calculus friends. My 6-year-old son is interested in really, really big numbers and in this idea of infinity. And so I think students younger than just like a calculus class talking about infinity in those sort of formal settings, I think students younger than your high school seniors and adults who have not taken calculus can have interesting conversations about ideas that lean into and toward infinity. So when I say what comes down the line here, I've actually been intentionally vague. And Deborah's calling out one of the things that we might have talked about. Like we might be talking about perimeter. We might be talking about sides. We might be talking about area. What if the area of that stage 1 square is 1 square unit? And if this is all drawn to scale, what's the area of stage 2? Well, it's 3/4. And what's the area of stage 3? Well, I'd have to go through and double check that. What would the area of stage 4 be, and stage 10, and stage n? N gets pretty tough. What would the area of stage infinity be? And like, what does that even mean? I won't give you an answer on the webinar, but I'll just offer that to you as a question that might be interesting to explore on your own with your colleagues or with your students. And my favorite question to ask for this one, I actually hadn't even thought of sides, so thanks, Deborah, for that, is think about the perimeter here. So we got steps, sides, area. Perimeter is fun, and we won't answer it here. Maybe this is what you chew on as you're kind of crawling into bed tonight, or you wake up in the morning, or maybe you already have an answer. I'm not sure. What happens to the perimeter for stage 4, 10, and infinity? What happens way down the line? Here's another conjecture. I think that this question might invite and encourage a larger group of folks to think about interesting ideas related to really, really large numbers and infinity and what happens over the long haul or in the long run. So we want to get to the Q&A, but I want to take maybe a minute and a half. I want to take a minute and a half to go on a quick tangent and then do a little bit of wrap up before we get to the Q&A. So here's the tangent. Here's one of my favorite humans, Christopher Danielson. He's a colleague of mine at Desmos. He blogs at, let me see if I can remember that title, Overthinking My Teaching is the blog. He also runs the blog, Talking Math with Your Kids. And he has wrote one of my favorite books ever. It's called Which One Doesn't Belong. And one of the reasons that I love this book is it invites genuine surprise. Yeah, Mary Barassa, Canada's own Mary Barassa, has a website inspired by Christopher's ideas at wodb.ca, Which One Doesn't Belong, on the Canadian internet, which we can all access, by the way, even here in the US or wherever you're watching from. But one of the reasons that I love Which One Doesn't Belong is it invites genuine surprise, which is a really cool thing for a math teacher, whether they're talking with their kids, their colleagues, or their students, to invite genuine surprise. So here's one of the pages in Christopher's truly delightful book. And the question is, which one of these doesn't belong? And the awesome thing is every single one has an answer. In fact, more than that, every single one has more than one answer potentially. And every single one might have an answer that Christopher, the author, never even thought of. Here's the answer my son gave when he was 5. This is about a year ago. Tyler said that the bottom left doesn't belong because it's the only square that nothing happened to. And his response there highlights one of the reasons that I love which one doesn't belong so much, which is part of the reason that I love this take on visual patterns that we've been looking at in the webinar. It's how do you see it? And not how do you see it? Let's fix that so your seeing can match my seeing. It's none of that. It's not what we did at the beginning, which was here's stage one. Now make a guess for stage two. And then I said, wrong. Here's the right answer. But it's legitimately asking, how do you see it? And then honoring that thinking. One of my favorite presenters, like if you are at a conference and Max Ray Reek is at the conference, like get to his session, because I always walk away inspired and encouraged. And he offered this in a recent Ignite session. He was explaining some of the things in math education that give him hope. And here's what he said about number talks, because number talks give him hope. He said, number talks give me hope. Kids learn that their ideas matter. And you can understand an idea different from your own. I think both of those are so, so valuable. Number one, kids learn that their ideas matter. And I think that's at play here with what comes next and what else might come next. And no, honestly, I want to know what you think comes next. How do you see it? Don't worry about how you think I might see it. Don't worry if you're on the money. Just how do you see it? And the second part of this is you, the student, you, the adult, you, the human being, can understand an idea different from your own. If that's not one of the most important things that we can build in our students and in our classrooms and in our culture, then like I'm not sure what we're doing and what we're aiming for. So I love that quote from Max, and I think it relates to the ideas we've been playing with here. And the slides will be available somehow. I think it's the internet. If you want the slides and can't get them, just send me a mention on Twitter. I'll make sure you get what you need. Now, I mentioned a tangent and wrap up, but I want to show you three quick images for bonus. These are patterns we didn't get to look at, but I'm super interested in segment-based patterns. Like, what's going on here? We could think about length. We could think about area if we shade some of this, like adult coloring book stuff for the win. You could think about movement. So look at that closed and open circle and how they dance around this regular hexagon. When will they be on the same point? Will they ever be on the same point? When will they be one spot away, two spots away, three spots away? So movement is something I'm interested in for all this pattern work. And then fractals. Now, I know this is a fractal. And I saw somebody posted the Wikipedia link to fractals a few minutes ago, so I can go brush up on my fractal skills earlier, later on as well. But anyway, this is a fun series of images to look at and ask questions like how many triangles, how many up, how many down, how many total. If we only count the black triangles, what's the area as a fraction of the whole? What's the perimeter of all the triangles put together? All kinds of questions that we could ask there. So here's the wrap up. We looked at 5 questions, and my hope is that this spark one or more of these questions will spark a lot of interesting conversations in your classrooms, in your math departments. Number one, what comes next? But keep pushing on that. What else might come next? And what else? And what else? And what else? What comes before? That might spark conversations about intercepts and zeros and integers. What comes between and between and between and so on down the line? And what comes way down the line? We kind of have this idea of epsilon and infinity playing around with 4 and 5. And then here's my invitation, my request to you is if you find any of these questions interesting, if you find these patterns interesting, share them with your students, share them with your colleagues, share them with, you know, kiddos who are stuck in your home and have to do math occasionally with you. And post what you like, take photos and share it online and throw on the hashtag pattern chat. I'll keep my eye on that. Hopefully some other folks will start to keep their eye on that. I think that'll be a whole lot of fun. So I went on, I ate up a good chunk of our Q&A time. Apologies for that. I'm going to leave my contact info up here, and then we'll devote the rest of our time together to Q&A. And then if I robbed you of some Q&A time that you needed, I'm on Twitter, I'm on email, and I'll be watching hashtag pattern chat. So Q&A. And just in case anybody has to go put their kids to bed before the Q&A is over, I just want to give a huge thank you to everybody for hanging out and playing with these ideas. And then we'll open it up to Q&A. Jot the questions down in the Q&A tab, if you would, rather than the chat. It'll be easier for me to keep track of that, because some folks are going to add their comments in the chat as well. So first Q&A question I see, do you ever get them to build these with manipulatives? Short answer, yes. Slightly longer answer is that I love really nice little math toys, and you can go to eBay and Etsy and all kinds of places and get little wooden like circles and triangles and squares and just dump those in front of students. I think plastic, you know, pattern blocks would be nice as well. My favorite units for building these patterns are circles, squares, and equilateral triangles, because you can do a lot of flexible things with those. But yeah, back to the short answer, absolutely. And especially, maybe that's not fair, especially younger students enjoy and benefit from manipulatives, but I'm not a younger student and I like manipulatives too. So maybe I don't want to rob the Algebra 2 students of that hands-on experience either. Chris is reminding me to say more about the wall of patterns. So yeah, this teacher, Anne Young, I believe is her name. She's printed all the patterns from visualpatterns.org, which is a phenomenal website, and just has a huge like banquet of visual patterns to go feast on. And Anne Young has printed all of them off and glued them or taped them or stapled them to the wall. And then she and her students do visual patterns quite frequently. And some of the work that they do with the patterns is, hey, this pattern that we just played with, which other patterns was this like and why? And so students, this is all sort of, I'm hearing this from Anne rather than having the privilege of visiting her classroom. Students will say, oh my gosh, this is just like pattern 23. And this one's like pattern 23, or, oh, that's like pattern 40. And they have their go-to, whether it's linear, quadratic, maybe triangular numbers show up. And so they're able to see those similarities and call out those differences from one pattern to another. I think that like meta pattern work that they do is super, super valuable. So that's Anne's wall of Fonz patterns and what Anne's students do with it. I find it super delightful. Other questions? I'm going to hop back into the chat to see if there's anything I missed there. Oh, Deborah says she's going to try some of this with teachers at a meeting. I would absolutely love to hear how it goes. Jackie, not sure if that question is directed at me or not, the whole period versus 5 minutes. I know that Fawn, who is a bit of an expert on visual patterns, just from her general like insightfulness and awesomeness, and also just all that time thinking about patterns, running the website. I know that Fawn uses visual patterns frequently as a warm-up, but then she gives her students, if I'm remembering this correctly, opportunities throughout the week to continue working on those patterns. So it's okay if they don't finish right away. It's okay if they need more time. But her students do a lot of really amazing work with these patterns. And over the course of months, they develop a proficiency so that some of these visual pattern games and questions can fit in a warm-up size chunk. And there are other times, and this is what would often happen in my own classroom, where I would we'd blow way beyond just the warm-up or the 5 to 10 minute chunk, and we would do maybe a half an hour with visual patterns. And I would sometimes give students a menu to choose from, and they would, you know, finish whichever one they wanted. And if they were done with one, move on to another. So some students would only get one done and others would get three or four, and they could gravitate toward more or less complex as they wanted. Scrolling through. Yeah. I hope the challenge was a good kind of challenge. That's my hope. Thanks for playing along, everybody. And not seeing any more questions there. Awesome, Deborah. Yeah, I look forward to hearing from you. I've got two questions lined up in the Q&A. Have you connected the patterns with cultural expressions in art? I have not personally, and I'd love to. There's some really interesting, I can't remember the name of the user that I followed, but there's some really amazing art that shows up on Twitter. So maybe just search for math art and see what rabbit hole that leads you down. And you could certainly make some connections between what we've been doing here, the conversations we've been having, the questions you might ask when looking at some sort of pattern and looking at different cultural expressions in art. But I have no personal experience for doing that. Eric says, any suggestions for moving from visual patterns to algebraic reasoning and representations? Yeah, let me camp on this for a minute or so instead of giving a quick answer, because I've actually found a lot of success stealing ideas from some former colleagues and some previous instructors in using a helping column. And so I frequently organize my all the numerical data that comes out of the work that my students and I did with visual patterns, we would frequently organize that into a T table. Two columns, there you go, bare bones. But we'd add another column and we'd think about, okay, this number 1, 4, 9, 16, like how are these numbers built? And so I might write in the helping column, 1 times 1, 2 times 2, 3 times 3, 4 times 4. And then I could look for connections, not just between my X and Y column, but between my X and my helping column. And the more complicated the pattern, the more helpful one or more helpful columns might be. So maybe your pattern is 2, 6, 12. Well, I don't know where that's going. But as soon as you see that it's 1 by 2, 2 by 3, 3 by 4, 4 by 5, 10 by 11, then it's N by N plus 1. So I found that thinking about numerical structure has helped my students make that jump to algebraic structure. And there's probably more to be said about that, but I should hit the pause button there and let Amanda wrap things up. So great question, Eric, and send me an email if you want to chat more about that.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for attending. Thank you, Michael, for your presentation and your challenges and asking us to think more about what comes next and what comes before and push our ideas about what patterns are and how to bring those conversations to our students. This will be available in the next few hours, so you can go to the same link that's provided here. So please feel free to come back to it, revisit it, and also share to your colleagues or your math friends or your friends. Thank you very much for joining us. The Global Math Department will be here next week as well for another presentation. So thank you again. And Michael's information is at the bottom of the screen if you want to reach out to him for further questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.